Good morning, colleagues.
A very good morning to you. What's the time now?
Good morning, Chairpersons. It's 9:30, Chairpersons. If I could hand over to yourselves to open the meeting.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the team education. May you fly the agenda, please. May I also say I'll switch off my video so I don't compromise the quality of the reception. I am in Acacia Park, so the reception is very poor here. Honorable members, there's the agenda of the meeting. Yeah, you all welcome. Let's look at the agenda. There's opening, welcome, adoption of the agenda, apologies. And we have two items on the agenda, briefing by the Department of on the NSC examination and the TMSS report. And then there will be questions, and then later we'll deal with the draft minutes of the last meeting that we had. DM, what we expect from this meeting is very simple. I'll come to that after we have adopted the agenda. Are there anyone who's moving for the adoption of the agenda? Any mover?
Chairperson, my name is Ronnie Moratetla. I move that this agenda be accepted as is.
Sir, any second, Ron Moratetla is moving. Honorable Moratetla, any second?
I second, Chair. Adjourn.
Honorable Adjourn, second. Honorable members, we are meeting again under the same conditions that we met in last year, under the COVID restrictions. And I'd like to, in a way, congratulate the and welcome the team education as led by the Deputy Minister and the administration team, management team led by the DG. We thank you. You have really done a sterling job under the circumstances where, you know, teachers were testing positive for COVID, and at the same time students also, but you managed to steer the ship to where we are now. Our expectation about this meeting is that we need to, in a way, get information about what happened with the leaking of the exam papers, the two papers. And then writing of the 2020 NSC examination, the marking processes, capturing of results, and standardization. In that order, without much ado, I'll give this opportunity to the DM to give us a briefing. Thanks. Over to you, DM.
Thank you so much, Chair. Greetings to you and greetings to the honorable members of both the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee. I am leading a team that is also led by the DG. Minister has sent an apology because now, as we are sitting here, Cabinet is also sitting. That's why she's not in this meeting today. And I think we'll reconsider scheduling meetings on Wednesdays because Wednesday is, of course, a cabinet day. Chair, you are correct. We have two items to present before both committees. And on the status of the marking of the examinations and all what transpires after the marking, as you correctly alluded to. But maybe a brief that we can give to members is that schools, the system has opened on the 25th of January. Members of SMTs went back to schools. Teachers joined from the 1st of February. We have been visiting schools. Learners are coming to collect books. Some are coming to collect school nutrition. So generally, schools are running. We have not received any challenges as far as the readiness to open the schools is concerned. So teachers are happy. Yes, we know that the virus is here to live with us, and we are graduating in managing the virus. We are not experts yet, but every day it's a lesson. Every day is a lesson, and the system keeps on improving, and how we respond also improves. So I am with a team that is going to present. Chair, I heard you alluding to the fact that what happened to the leaked papers. Yes, we will give a bit of a response to that, especially on the methodology that we are using to investigate. Remember, even last time we indicated to the committee that we'll do even investigative marking, we'll do all this to determine exactly that can the status of this examination be affected by the leaks. So we are going to present on the method that is going to be used. Remember, it's in two times. The other one is with the security agencies, which we don't want to tamper that much with, and those that we did as part of the management of the irregularities or in the running of the examination. Those ones we are going to present to you. So I am with the DG and the team Basic Education. I would love to share through your permission to allow the DG to lead us on the presentation. And I want to make a request that maybe we do both presentations, then we take discussions thereafter. So if that is agreed to, then Chair, allow me to call the DG to present.
That will be allowed. That is in order.
Thank you. DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister, colleagues from the Department of Basic Education, and colleagues from the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee. Chair, indeed, as the Deputy Minister correctly pointed out, we are presenting to the Portfolio and the Select Committee two presentations, one on the National Senior Certificate. We're giving a progress of the activities that have been carried out so far, but also a bit of the investigation, as you correctly pointed out, Chair. We will also present the report on the trends in international mathematics and science studies. The study which was conducted in 2019, as you'd know, that these studies are conducted every 5 years. So the report was presented December last year, and we will be taking the committee through the findings of that study. I will be failing in my duty for not acknowledging the leadership of the minister and the Deputy Minister carrying us through a very difficult year of 2020. That guidance and leadership came in quite handy. Also, the leadership from the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee as an important sounding board, but also holding us accountable. I want to also highlight the fact that where we've managed to succeed and where we've managed to achieve, credit goes to you also, Chair, as well as the Portfolio Committee and the entire Select Committee for the work that we've been able to do. Without any waste of time, Chair, I am going to request Dr. Polia, who is the Chief Director for Exams, to take us through the presentation of the National Senior Certificate. Indeed, it was an extremely difficult year, 2020. We lost teachers, we lost school principals. As you would be aware, Chair, we even lost teachers who came to mark our scripts, dedicated men and women who were determined to even carry out this national assignment despite the threat of ill health and even, you know, imminent death every step of the way. We've also lost internal and external moderators. We've lost our chief markers, and these skills are very difficult to find. It takes a long time to get people who are experienced and who are able to do this work in the system. So we are a bit reeling as we begin the year of 2021, but we hope that we'll still have to rely on your guidance and your leadership as we navigate our way through the year of 2021. So I'm going to request Dr. Polia to take us through the first presentation. Shortly thereafter, Dr. Mark Chetty will then take us through the team's report. Dr. Polia?
May I say before the good doctor, I also forgot to acknowledge the chairperson, Bongiwe Mbingo Gigaba. She is in the meeting here. Welcome, Chair, to the meeting. Thanks a lot. You may continue, DG.
Thank you, DG, and good morning to the honorable chairpersons. Good morning to the honorable members. Good morning to our deputy minister, director general, and other persons present. The title of the presentation says update on marking, but as our DG mentioned, we will provide you with a broader update, which will touch on writing and will provide all the processes subsequent to marking. And my colleagues are going to help me with the flighting of the presentation. I seem to have a problem from my side. In terms of the outline of the presentation, we'll go through all the subsequent processes. And I think our honorable chairperson seems to have a good hold on the examination processes. Congratulations, honorable chairperson. You had them in the correct sequence and order. In terms of the writing and some introductory comments, while we're waiting for the flighting of the slides, the examination commenced on the 5th of November and terminated on the 15th. We had a later exam scheduling this year, and this was an extraordinary exam for two central reasons. Firstly, we were not only dealing with larger numbers, over a million learners, but we had to accommodate COVID-19 and adjust our protocols accordingly. It seems as if my colleagues are having a problem with the flighting. Mr. Mahada? Thank you. Thank you. Much appreciated. My apologies, Chairperson. We're on slide 4. Thank you. Thank you. as indicated, this was a large exam and an exam that had the challenges of COVID-19 to deal with. We had both learners and teachers that were testing positive. But I think where our minister took a bold step was that we allowed learners who tested positive to write the examination. We created isolation rooms, and I think in that area we were extremely successful. Marking was also completed. I mean, it was a mammoth task, over 45,000 markers in 179 venues, spending over 12 days in this confined space. And you will see the statistics in terms of the number that tested. So I think that our marking was indeed another success story. Now, in terms of the writing, the examinations were well managed across all provinces. We had the normal irregularities, but unfortunately, I think the leakage of the mathematics paper 2 and physical science paper 2 has created a blemish. And as much as we've done well in all the other areas, I think this particular leakage will still dominate discussions around the 2020 NSC examination. We had few incidents of protest action, power outages that may have caused a delay, but did not impact on the examination on the whole. Moving on to the next slide, which is the marking. Marking commenced in January, and unlike previous years when marking was done in December, starting in November, this year it started on the 4th of January and terminated on the 22nd. Obviously, there were some smaller subjects that would have ended earlier. The exact number of markers was 45,272, and we had a 94.6% turnout, which I think was excellent, and only 0.7% tested positive. And this testing was on arrival, so they were not allowed to enter the marking center, and they were immediately sent home. And with the over 5% that did not pitch, we could accommodate that simply because in our planning, we did foresee the fact that there may be large numbers that will not turn up. So we had an extended reserve list, and that extended reserve list allowed us to accommodate the shortfalls, and I'll provide you with the exact figures in a moment. So marking was successfully completed. Moving on to the next slide, which provides us with the exact numbers in terms of the marking. The number of markers are listed per province, with the Gauteng appointing 12,148 markers. We marked at 179 centers, and I want to mention that our director general visited all centers during the marking process. How he did this, I'm not sure, but he literally, physically, in person, visited each of these centers. We had 2,463 withdrawals, and these withdrawals were accommodated by replacements. There were fewer replacements, but that does not mean that the marking was compromised. Simply what we do is that we extend the number of marking days where we could not find markers, particularly for certain subjects which are very specialized. And the number of markers that tested positive was 315. And unfortunately, we had 7 fatalities, and we want to once again express our thoughts and our sincere condolences to the families of the 7. Like our DG said, they died in harness. They died as educational martyrs trying to accomplish a national assignment. Moving on to the capture. Capture is a very important part, because once the marking is done, those marks are transcribed onto mark sheets, and from mark sheets, they have to now be captured on the examination computer system. And we employ a double capture system, whereby every mark is captured twice, so that once it's captured the first time, if a different mark is captured the second time, immediately you'll have a pop-up warning that the mark is different and that needs to be checked. So this is a mechanism to ensure that we correct or we capture accurately. We had 611 capturers across the nine provinces. Capturing took place at 34 different centers. We utilized 55 different rooms so that we had more spreading of our capturers, and the dates are provided. And we only had two capturers that tested positive. Now, the next slide provides you with an indication of the percentage of marks that were captured. Umalusi requires a threshold of 95% of the marks to be captured for standardization. Obviously, for release, we want all marks captured. But if you look at the figures, and we have three columns simply because we had three different groups writing this exam, which included NSC and senior certificate. Now, looking at the figures, you'll find that all our provinces, in fact, we had some provinces that captured 100% and others were close to 100 at 99.65, 99.98. Now, the small percentage of non-capture emanates from mark sheets that may have a problem in terms of where the exam number may not be correct, or there could be some other matter which does not allow for the marks to be captured. But all of this will be dealt with during this mop-up period between now and the release. So we target 100% capture in terms of the release of results. Now, once the marks are captured, the marks must be then submitted to Umalusi. So we close the system on the 26th for NSC and on the 27th for the senior certificate. These were the two qualifications that were written in this examination. I spoke about the 95%, and the data sets are then submitted to Umalusi for approval, and both the NSC and senior certificate data sets were approved by Umalusi as per schedule. What Umalusi approves is the processing of the data sets, where you combine the two papers or the three papers, and the data is now presented per subject to Umalusi for the standardization process. But it's data that needs to be double checked by Umalusi to make sure that it was properly captured and that all other details are accurate. Standardization is an important process, and standardization is simply a process that ensures that no learner is disadvantaged simply because of the year in which he writes his examination. So whether the learner writes an exam in 2019 or 2018, we must make sure they are equivalent standard. But the standard of the question paper, the standard of the marking, only becomes evident after the examination is written, after the marks are processed through the marking. And therefore, this process is significant. Now, in terms of our preparation for standardization, we need to gather as much information, because we don't want standardization to be governed by just numbers and figures. Standardization must also bring in qualitative data. And qualitative data comes from a number of sources. And our Director General has taken the preparation for marking standardization to another level. Previously, it would just be a once-off meeting with Umalusi. But now we have a series of precursor meetings and meetings that the DG has convened with individual provinces to get their inputs with regard to individual subjects. Also, specific meetings with subject specialists, with the examining panels. So there was a plethora of inputs, both qualitative and quantitative, that was compiled and put together in preparation for the standardization meeting. Our internal moderators report, because while marking, they pick up issues which they then record and make clear recommendations in that regard. And from a statistical perspective, all the data is captured. It is then put into what we call a standardization booklet, and that standardization booklet would have all the data per subject for this very important meeting. On the next slide, we provide you with a sense of the meetings that were hosted on the 31st of January, which was a Sunday. The DBE at 10:30 presented a 614-page report to Umalusi, and it's referred to as the evidence-based report. And the evidence-based report captures all that has been done and what these learners have been exposed to, not just in the grade 12 year. We tried to go as far back as grade 10 and in some cases even lower down. So that Umalusi gets a good sense of this cohort. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? And it's important that in our analysis, we've managed to establish that this is a stronger cohort if you compare their performance in grade 11 compared to previous grade 11 classes, and as well in grade 10 to previous grade 10 classes. So in the absence of COVID, this certainly would be one of our better performing classes, but we still need to wait to see what the outcome is. And then on Sunday, we had a technical task meeting that looked at all the numbers, tried to put together the qualitative data and come up with proposals, which were then presented to a pre-standardization meeting of all nine provinces with their subject specialists together with the HODs. We spent 2 days going subject by subject and preparing the proposals. These proposals were finally presented on Tuesday the 2nd to HEDCOM. And HEDCOM also interrogated these proposals before they were presented to Umalusi on the 3rd of February. There were two separate meetings, one at 2 o'clock for the NSC and the 4 o'clock meeting for the senior certificate. Management of irregularities, the examinations internationally will have irregularities. I think the issue is not the irregularity per se, but it's about how irregularities are managed. And I think we have a very vigilant system that is able to detect these irregularities and deal with them appropriately. Irregularities are reported on a daily basis to the DBE. Investigations commence immediately. And our intention is that all learner results should be released on the 23rd. And no learner's results should be held back simply because it's still under investigation. However, there may be a handful of irregularities that would require more extensive investigation, and we would then allow those under special conditions to allow for the investigation to be completed, and the results will be released after the official release. But those are few and far between and very tightly controlled. And we have what is called the National Examination Irregularities Committee, established by the minister, and their purpose is to go through every irregularity per province, and that also is a two-day meeting to make sure that provinces have handled the irregularities appropriately. But more important than that is to ensure uniformity across provinces, particularly in terms of the sanctions that are applied. And that meeting took place on the 29th and the 30th. We then move on to the approval, and approval is an important meeting that will take place on the 12th of February. And at this particular meeting, the Director General will present a comprehensive report on the examination irregularities per province to Umalusi. And on the basis of this report, both the Umalusi Council together with the Director General will then make a determination on whether the results can be approved for publication. Now, in the report that we submit, it would also include the leakage of both Maths Paper 2 and Physical Science Paper 2. And the main purpose of this approval meeting is to ensure that no irregularity goes unchecked, but more importantly, no irregularity compromises the examination as a whole. I'll just very briefly, and as our Deputy Minister has indicated, this is work in progress, and I'll just provide honorable members with just a sense of what the objectives are of this investigation in terms of maths and physical science. We have a five-pronged set of objectives. Firstly, we want to get to the source. Unless we get to the source, the chances of such irregularities recurring are high. We need to get to the source, and we need to find out what is it that contributed to this leakage and how we can strengthen the system, close those gaps, and make sure there's no recurrence. The extent of the leak is very important because the extent of the leak determines the extent of the compromise. We want to also establish whether the examination was compromised in a restricted, limited space, or is it widespread? And therefore, does it mean that the whole of the maths and the whole of the physical science as an examination has been compromised? So that's very important. And bullet number four talks about identifying the specific candidate. Now, you and I are aware that because this was spread on the electronic media, WhatsApp, determining the exact candidates and the exact number may be difficult, but I'll tell you a little more about the methodology that we follow, which will help us to get close to where we need to get to. And finally, make recommendations for the improvement of the examination system to ensure that this does not happen again. In terms of the methodology, we had seven key initiatives relating to this investigation, and we wanted to make sure that we leave no stone unturned in addressing the objectives that I outlined earlier. The matter was immediately reported to the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, DPCI, popularly referred to as the Hawks, and they have prioritized this case, but obviously they have a number of other cases that they are dealing with. We then conducted an audit of the distribution chain. As a DBE, we then took or followed the maths and physical science paper from the time it left the DBE offices and followed its route in each of the nine provinces, at the printing venue, at the storage point, and finally at circuit and nodal points going to schools to find out whether there was any weakness that we could detect that may serve as an indicator that the leak could have occurred at that particular point. Interview of officials and other staff that are involved in key functions, and we were hoping that through these interviews we'll get additional information that may point us in the direction of the source of the leak. We interviewed all candidates who were implicated, and we received information coming out of all of this. And we then conduct another very interesting process, which is referred to as investigative marking. Investigative marking looks at a group of trained auditors or markers who are trained as auditors. So they look at every script and their particular cues, particular aspects in the paper that they are trained to look for. And whenever there's an irregularity, we employ this approach to find evidence coming out of the script and the responses of the learner, which may point to the fact that the learner may have had prior access to the paper. And the statistical analysis is another very useful tool. And in this case, it was based on more a comparative analysis. And the comparative analysis would look at the performance in paper two, which we say is compromised. How does a performance in paper two compromise, or rather compare to performance in paper one? And that process also will reveal learners who may be outliers. In other words, learners who've done very much better in paper two compared to paper one. Obviously, paper one and paper two do not have a one-on-one correlation, but in the statistical model that we use, we build in the fact that the one paper, the performance may be higher, and then we identify the outliers. And those outliers are not regarded as having had access to the paper, but it simply means somebody who performs extremely well in one paper, that is a reason for further investigation. But we will not implicate a learner purely on the basis of statistical analysis. We must have more evidence than just statistical analysis to implicate a learner. And finally, we've appointed a forensic investigation company, and they'll do the forensic analysis in conjunction with the Hawks that are also doing the forensic analysis on cell phones. And then going to the last process, which is the release of the results, which would depend on the Umalusi approval meeting on the 12th. Minister will make the official announcement on the 22nd of February, and in order to accommodate COVID and the current context in which we are operating, for the first time we're going to have a virtual meeting or a virtual announcement by the minister, which would be broadcast from the central venue in Pretoria to the 9 satellite centers in the 9 PEDs. Minister will be based at the central venue with selected guests together with the Deputy Minister and the DG, and the MECs will be based at the selected provincial centers with selected provincial guests. And unfortunately, we're discouraging bringing our top achievers to the central venue, but rather our top achievers will be based in the province in which they will be located. So the MEC will present the award to the top achievers on behalf of the minister. So that is an update of the exams. And in conclusion, Honorable Chairs, I want to say that the successful administration of the 2020 combined exam is a major achievement given the challenges relating to COVID-19. And as mentioned by our DG, and I want to reiterate sincere appreciation to all parents for being bold enough to have released their learners to write the exam. Learners, educators, markers, invigilators, provincial and national officials, senior management, and all stakeholders for your sacrificial service and boldness in making 2020 academic year a reality. We are confident that the recovery programs implemented by the department, together with the initiatives to insulate the class of 2020 from the negative effects of COVID-19, will be reflected in the performance of the class of 2020. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Dr. Mark Chetty, next one, please.
Thank you, DG. I'm going to share my screen and I hope the presentation is visible. Good morning, Deputy Minister, Honorable Shepherd. Thanks, DG. And I was just saying good morning to the Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the portfolio and select committees and officials present. Following on from Dr. Polia's presentation, the trends in international mathematics and science study, which we call TIMS, is probably a very appropriate study to release at this point, given the pressures on the system that we just heard from the NSC presentation on mathematics and science. So the sector will want to know what are the issues affecting mathematics and science in the earlier grades. And we know that TIMS is an international study, and it gives us a sound methodology of understanding South African children's performance and achievement levels in mathematics and science. So today we want to present highlights of the South African grade 5 and grade 9 results in TIMSS. And perhaps just at the outset to say that the purpose of these international studies, and we participate in a few of them, is perhaps to benchmark our performance, not only against the other countries that are participating, but to give us a sense at these critical time points, at these grades and in these areas of content, how are we doing against international norms, against an international standardized test that has been benchmarked? And perhaps we can also use the TIMSS study to understand our improvement levels. And that's probably the more important takeaway point from this presentation and the study results in general. How can we measure our performance levels and link it to our interventions, especially what's going on from a national perspective and provincial? And there'll be quite a few results that allude to that. And thirdly, perhaps we can view TIMSS in context of other studies and other data that we have going on so that we can find threads in the system and across study. We usually have a lot of data and the DBE through the DG and the leadership of the minister and the DM is committed to an evidence-driven system. So we need evidence in which to monitor our interventions, look at what's working, review, analyze, and go forward. So studies like this give us a sense of which areas we could strengthen. The power of TIMSS is that we've been doing it for quite a few years now. In fact, it was our seventh cycle. We started in 1995. So we have 25 years of TIMSS data. And that allows us to, you know, do several analyses within a specific cycle and across cycles. And we'll be sharing some results that gives information from that kind of analysis. Important to note that historically we have been testing our learners in maths and science at the grade 9 level. We started testing grade 5 from 2015 because we saw the need to extend the study, which is available at a lower grade as well, and to give us important information in the earlier years of schooling. Now, the research questions attached to TIMSS is, what are the mathematics and science achievement levels? What are the trends that we can observe between two different time points? And TIMSS is a very good methodology of monitoring trends over time. That's the power behind TIMSS, is actually in the trend study. By locking in certain test items, which are kept constant through different time points, so questions that were asked in 1995, some of them have still continued to appear, and we call them, you know, our anchor items. So we lock them in, and then you test learners at different time points against these same items. And you introduce some new items as well, but you have enough data then to confidently say that this is the measure of improvement. And the third aspect of TIMSS is perhaps, what is the understanding behind South Africa's performance? So what is the factors influencing mathematics and science achievement in South Africa? The TIMSS process is quite a rigorous one because we got to comply to international standards and prescripts from printing, packaging, from translation, verification, to administration, to marking and coding, capture, and the International Association for Evaluation and Assessment, which is the IEA, which is the mother body that runs TIMSS and PIRLS, has to approve our data set, has to approve that we have complied with the international prescripts before we can be included in the international data set. And we can confidently say that that has happened, and the TIMSS data was approved and it was included. So we do appear in the international data set, And we can confidently say that these results have been checked and verified on an international standard. Now, in terms of the TIMSS 2019 participation, so we've participated at two grades. We've participated at the grade 5 level with 64 other countries, and we had a participation of 297 schools and about 11,000 learners. We had an extended sample in grade 9. Some countries take at grade 8, with 46 other countries. And we had 519 schools participating and almost 20,000 learners. This, on a scientific basis, gives us quite a good accurate data set in which to make estimates on the entire population at grade 5 and at grade 9. Now, to unpack the achievement story, and the presentation is largely structured about giving you a sense about the achievement story, and secondly, about what are the factors underlying this achievement. So we'll share some data about achievement and ability levels, and the trend data across different time points, the achievement gaps, where are the gaps that we need to focus in, zone in, and strengthen our interventions, and a little bit about the match between TIMSS and our current curriculum statement articulated in CAPS. So, in terms of the overall achievement on the TIMSS scale, now the TIMSS scale is a scale that we use in international benchmark studies, which is a 0 to 1,000 points, and you have a center point of 500 points. And TIMSS uses benchmarks in which to locate the performance of learners, you know, on the scale. So in terms of South Africa, we scored 374 points in the grade 5 mathematics and 324 points in grade 5 science. And you can see I've just included some of the other countries here, not to say that we need to compare ourselves with these countries, but to have a sense of where in the world are the countries really performing well. And perhaps we can extract some lessons, you know, from the countries that are doing well in order to strengthen our own interventions. That's always a good lesson or a good practice to follow. And we find that it's the Asian countries that are doing really, really well in mathematics and science. And this was the picture in 2015 as well, but you had Finland in that mix. Now you can see that, you know, it's clearly dominated by countries in the east, Singapore being on top of the pile. And this is similar at the grade 9 level, with the same countries and including Russia coming into the mix. But in terms of our performance, South Africa scored 389 in mathematics and 370 points in science. So you can see that the grade 9 performance is better than the grade 5 performance. In terms of achievement trends, so in terms of South Africa, we can see that we are still one of the biggest improvers. Between 2011 and 2019, so if you take the last two cycles of TIMSS, then it shows that South Africa learners' performance increased, you know, almost by 40 points in mathematics and science. And that's consistently one of the bigger improvers when we compare the other countries. So outside of, and in the last cycle, we were the biggest improvers in terms. So Bahrain, you know, their mathematics performance was a bit of an anomaly, and there's, you know, there's issues around that, but outside of that country, we can see that we are, you know, quite significantly higher than other countries. So that's important to note, that not only the 2019 performance, but as we measure trends over time, we can see that we are still in the right direction. Some countries have shown a negative performance, some due to being quite doing quite well previously, but others are also, you know, looking at what issues could have affected. So countries like Italy, United States, New Zealand, England, Hong Kong all had come down from their previous achievement levels. Now, in terms of some of the diagnostic data, which is a very powerful source of informing interventions in mathematics and science, in terms of cognitive domains and content domains, South Africa has a mixed performance, and we are seeing that through the analysis, and I must say at the outset that this is still work in progress, and we are working on a complete diagnostic report, which will be available probably by the end of the first quarter, that goes deeper into the items themselves. Where, on which specific items are learners really struggling and where are they doing well? So we're just flagging a few here to give members a sense of where are South African learners strong. We seem to be quite strong in the knowledge questions. At least 52% of our learners get full credit for answering typical questions like this that is shown on your screen, which is just a data extraction question, and learners have to indicate what was the water level for week 8. But of course, we're not as strong as countries like Japan and Singapore. You know, we're getting almost all the learners get these questions correct. But perhaps where we need to focus our attention is on other skills level, and this will be, you know, packaged in a way that speaks to the teacher in the classroom, and we will provide those diagnostic reports to the maths and science teachers across the country so that they can have a sense of what kind of questions they need to strengthen our learners' performance on. So in questions on application, where you got to look at calculating the value of an angle in an irregular quadrilateral. And, you know, at the grade 9 level, this is not technically a difficult question. But we find learners in South Africa, 27% of those were able to answer this with full credit. There could have been a high percentage of learners that had partial credit, but on full credit, 27. So you can see it's lower than the knowledge questions. The international average is around 56%. Also in the TIMSS framework is questions on reasoning. So we have three cognitive domains in which the questions are formulated. There's a knowledge, application, and reasoning, with reasoning being the most, you know, sort of high-end or difficult questions for learners to understand. And we see this is where we need to give a lot of attention and help learners and help teachers deal with these kinds of questions in their classroom teaching. So questions around reasoning, where you have to use the information and make an inference, use the data that's given and the information, and then arrive at a conclusion. On those kinds of questions, then we had 20% of learners, you know, achieving full credit. Now, I must indicate that this is not the full analysis, but it's just to give committee members a sense of, you know, where learners are doing well and where there will be a fuller report on it. In terms of the distribution levels at the grade 5 and the grade 9, there's also interesting trends. So we can see our average scale scores, and we can see the distribution levels with those bars. You don't have to worry about the technical aspects of it. What we need to point out is that science has a wider distribution and starts at much lower scores than mathematics. So that says there's a story around science that we need to look more carefully at in our interventions. And perhaps most of the interventions around provincial levels and at district and at cluster levels focus on mathematics and languages. And that needs to be extended towards science as well. So, and we need to have a distribution that's moving from the lower scores more to the higher scores. So a shift to the right is what we are looking for over time. So we need to do some work in terms of science. So in terms of the trends over time. You can see this slide shows the achievement between 2003 and 2015, and we had a increase to 2019 by 17 points. So over time, we've been increasing. So in terms of mathematics, 2003 to 2011 was 67, between 2011 to 2015, 20, and between 2015 and 2019, 70. So we've been improving, but you can observe that the rate of improvement is slightly is slowing down. So we need not only to improve, but we need to put greater energy into the system so that we are improving, you know, at a faster rate. And it's a similar situation with science. So between 2003 to 2019, if we take the last 10 years as a benchmark, then we can see that this, the improvement is significant. And it's significant because we would then have improved by about 100 points in mathematics and science. And that statistically is one standard deviation. So it's really shows that the system from where we were in 2003 and where we are now is, you know, we've made significant progress in terms of mathematics and science ability levels. So that's good, and those are positive signs. So at the grade five level, we can see that we have improved, but there are observations and patterns that show that there were decreases in Mpumalanga and in the independent schools. Now, this needs to be investigated a little bit further, and I know there might be issues from committee members as to why. So the reasons for that resides outside of the TIMSS data. So the TIMSS is pointing us to where there's a gap and where we're seeing certain observations that are noteworthy. And then we look at now what is the context in certain provinces, what are the interventions, what is happening, and that is the investigations that need to take place. And we will be articulating this to the provinces and packaging the information so they can really look at their own provincial data in a more in-depth manner. We also note that the patterns in primary and secondary schools show that the performance is better at secondary schools than in primary. So again, we need to enhance the interventions at the primary school level, at the early years of intervention, and perhaps a lot of interventions are taking place at the secondary school level. And that is showing dividends, but we need to stretch that and extend it to the primary school. In terms of ability levels, it's also an area, as I've indicated earlier, where TIMSS divides or interprets the analysis in terms of different kinds of benchmarks. Low benchmark, intermediate, high, and advanced. So the low benchmarks is where learners show some knowledge, you know, of the content areas. The intermediate is where they can show some knowledge and apply knowledge in situations. And then the high benchmark is that they can apply the knowledge and understand, have an understanding in complex situations. And then at the advanced benchmark is where they can apply and reason problem situations and make generalizations. So our learners, the majority of them, are clustered around the low to intermediate benchmark. So in our interventions and pedagogy on an improving mathematics and science teaching and learning, we need to focus energy. We need to organize training sessions. And it's already happening, but we need to strengthen them in terms of getting learners to be able to answer questions that are associated internationally on the high to advanced benchmark. And that's similar at the grade nine levels, the patterns are similar. So the learnings from the mathematics achievement is that we can see significant improvement in the system between different time points. Most of the improvement is at the lower end, which is good. So we know those learners in previous cycles at the lower end in mathematics are now starting to shift those bars to the right and achieve higher scores. more needs to be done though. And in 2019, we observed that 4 in 10 learners compared to 2003, when 1 in 10 learners could demonstrate the basic mathematical and science knowledge. So that's a point that needs to be underlined. So the rate of improvement, but is slowing down. So we need to check our interventions, whether there's a plateau, whether we've, you know, with the current set of interventions, whether we've reached a sort of climax with those interventions, whether we now need to become more dynamic and innovative or bring in new interventions, knowing that interventions do take quite a while to show itself in terms of improvements in results. Sometimes you've got to wait 4 to 5 years before you can measure the impact of an intervention. But if we want to meet our quite ambitious targets in the MTSF and on the national development plans, then we need for the improvement rate to be much larger than what we achieve. And so in the next cycle, terms 2023, we would be targeting a score of 420, where our scores are currently at 380. So we need to improve by about 40 points, which would require significant effort. So we need to garner the sector, we need to pull together all elements of society and work together towards a common goal. So when we look at the within grades analysis and we look at the across grades, we can see that our means are improving. We would want them to improve further, but we are on an upward trajectory. What's interesting is that when you look across the grades, now in 2015, and this is why we've chosen grade 5 and grade 9. The grade 5 learners of 2015 became the grade 9 learners of 2019. So those learners that took part, you know, that cohort that took part in terms 2015, we can now see what were their scores in 2019, because they moved through the system from the intermediate phase to the senior phase. And there we can see on the low benchmark, there is improvement from 39 to 41%, from 17 at the grade 9, it stayed at 17. So we can see that there's bigger improvement from the intermediate phase to the senior phase than at the senior phase going upward. So what it means is that we need to strengthen our achievement levels and our interventions at the grade 5 level so that, you know, or earlier, so that as learners move through the system, you see that improvement coming through. So the grade 5 mean was 374 in 2019. That cohort of learners then got 389 at the grade 9 level in 2019. Okay, so science achievement is lower than mathematics. So we need to focus energy there. And we can see that the science gaps are higher than the mathematics gaps. This may be due to the language of instruction, the resources for science teaching, or the educator knowledge in the teaching and learning of science. And I will share a slide that speaks about the qualifications of the teachers in science and maths. National and provincial departments of education must also focus on science learning and teaching. Also in the achievement trends, we see gaps between fee paying and no fee paying. And we can see that at the grade 9 level, this gap is 75 points, and at the grade 5 level, it's 105 points. So it's much higher at grade 5 than at grade 9. And it's a similar situation for science as well. So again, it points to the benefit and the need for focusing on no fee paying schools and focusing on the earlier grades. And that will, you know, help us to close the gaps. Provincial and poverty levels are also important to track. In terms of quintile performance, You can see here that the quintile 5 performance is higher than the quintile 1 and 2 and 3. And you can see that at the grade 9 level, the independent schools are higher than the quintile 5. But at the grade 5 level, we have a similar pattern with the quintile 5 being higher, but higher than the independent schools, which we can also take some positivity around. In terms of gender, it's often been a trend for the last few cycles that the girls are achieving significantly higher than the boys in maths and science. This is observed at the grade 5 level, where it's quite striking. It's not so bad at the grade 9 level. So the boys do catch up, probably maturity levels. They are more socialized into schooling, the expectations, and are more motivated. So it's important that we keep gender and we keep tracking. It's encouraging that our girls are doing well. They are acclimatized to schooling faster than boys. And the boys do catch up, so it's important that we keep the boys post grade 9, that we don't lose them, because they are showing that as they stay longer in the system, their results improve. In terms of the types of questions, we also find that our learners are doing better on multiple choice than on constructed response. So TIMSS gives quite a bit of data. This may point to, again, reading and writing skills, where there's less reading required. In constructed response, you will require more reading, and learners tend to find those questions more difficult. It's similar at the grade 9 level as well. So in terms of the match to CAPS, we're quite confident, and we do this with each cycle, and we do have a role to play in the selection of items. So, you know, we are involved in that. We're currently involved in that for the 2023 term cycle, where we've just started with the development of items so that South African learners are not disadvantaged. In certain areas, there is a stronger match, and we would want, you know, curriculum to look at data and probability and to look at how we can find a greater match. But in terms of number, algebra, geometry, there's quite a high match between the TIMSS curriculum and questions asked and what is currently taught in the CAPS curriculum, as well as for science. Okay, so in terms of specific areas, TIMSS data also shows on which topics we can see learners performing, and, you know, we will produce diagnostic reports on this to give our maths and science teachers more information on topic areas as well, both at the grade 5 and at the grade 9. Moving to provincial performance, because this is often an area of interest, we can see at the grade 5 level, we have the Western Cape, Gauteng, and the Free State. So it's a similar pattern to the NSC. And, you know, so it shows that if these learners, you know, that are supported in the earlier grades will ultimately be our grade 12 learners, and you might see similar performances there. So in provinces that are at the bottom end, and these are more rural, more, one could say, less resourced provinces, then we know we need to focus still, and that has been the position of government, to focus interventions at these more less resourced provinces. So Limpopo and Mpumalanga Northwest still form the bottom three at the grade 5 level. What is important is that there is a bigger difference between mathematics and science achievement in less resource provinces. In terms of the grade 9, we can also see that the similar pattern emerging with the top three provinces and the bottom three. But here, I think we also wanted to flag that when you're looking at achievements, it's important to look at the GDP per capita in those provinces, look at the poverty rates, look at the school populations. Because all these play a role in why certain provinces are doing well and why certain provinces are lagging behind. And there's lots of historical issues as well that we need to overcome in certain provinces. In terms of the achievement trends that we observe in the patterns for the provinces, we can see some positive observations here. There's the 2011 achievement gap between the lowest and highest achieving provinces was 89 points for maths and 127 points for science. In 2019, this achievement gap dropped to 77 and 108 points, which means that the gap is getting smaller, which is a positive for the system. What influences achievement? Well, there's several factors, and these have come through previous cycles, they have come through other interventions, and TIMSS is highlighting them as well. They are not new, so I should say already there are interventions in place to look at these and to strengthen them, and perhaps in a few years, perhaps in the next cycle, we would see some dividends of these interventions around language of teaching and learning, early learning activities. I think we're seeing the system now put a lot more effort into the early learning activities, and we'll start seeing those benefits in future cycles. It may be this cycle was too early to measure that impact. Educator preparation and professional development, is there's a lot more being done, and we just last year released a TALIS study, which also gives us very good data about how educators are feeling in the system. You know, what is their comfort levels? Where are the areas that they are telling us that they need development? And TIMSS, you know, re-emphasizes that and correlates the patterns that we are seeing in the other educator studies. Educational resources will always play a role. TIMSS has a very strong contextual framework about linking data from the home to the school to the learner. And we see a very positive associations where resources being strong at home, you know, playing itself out in eventually how learners perform in school. So access to basic resources, there's a lot of contextual data that comes through TIMSS that can be used to monitor our interventions and as checkpoints. And it shows gaps between fee paying and no fee paying. And we already have highlighted that that plays out in the results that we're seeing in those different categories of learners. The language of learning is always a strong association with performance. And TIMSS again correlates that learners who frequently speak the language at home perform higher than those that never speak it at home. Again, it comes back to the resources and support mechanisms and what can be done to strengthen and close these gaps is important takeaway point from the TIMSS study. Early learning is shown to have strong positive associations with learner performance. And it was interesting that the questions that were asked to parents and as to what support you give your children, and they could, in the data, you could find very strong correlations between the learners that did well and what the parents reported doing with the children at home. So reading with the children, playing, you know, with alphabets and games and building blocks, those who were singing, counting songs, all that strengthens the support of the learner at home. And this plays itself in improvement achievement scales in studies like this. So what can learners do well before school? Most of our learners, you know, or half of them can recognize and write letters of the alphabet. So that's positive. A quarter of them could write or recognize numbers. So numeracy levels seems to be lagging slightly behind literacy levels. So more effort needs to be put in at grade R's and even the grades before that. And now that the function shift is moving to DBE, I think we're going to see interventions. We're going to see more curriculum support to learners before they enter the formal schooling, and this will, you know, show benefits and dividends in later cycles of our measurement. So in terms of teacher preparation and teacher qualification and specialization, because that's very important. As learners move through the grades, you want learners to be taught by teachers that are well qualified and are specialized in those areas. So why do we find the grade 9 performance to be better than the grade 5 performance in both maths and science? One of the reasons could be that 80% of learners at the grade 9 level are taught by a specialist teacher, a teacher with at least a bachelor's degree in the content area, a maths or science specialist. But in the primary school, it drops to about 60%, where 60% of our learners are taught by teachers with that kind of specialization. So we need to attract more teachers with the required specializations. We need to speak to our higher education sector as well to see how we can strengthen and close that gap. So in terms of the development of teachers, it comes out very clearly through this and other studies that teachers require assistance with improving learners' critical and problem-solving skills. So it's not a surprise that 89% of our teachers are saying they need professional development in this area. And then we see the areas where our learners are kind of, you know, performing, where they're finding it a challenge in the application and the reasoning skills. So that all kind of links in well together. So the information comes quite strongly there. Access to resources is always important, because learners need to follow through. We've seen this with COVID, an even greater need for learners to have resources that they can look at and go through on their own. And we see that coming out quite strongly at the grade 5 level and at the grade 9 level, that, you know, where learners had their own textbook, their own workbook, then the scores were higher than those who had to share or those who did not have. That was, a pattern that came out quite strongly. So in terms of access to IT and devices, so it's interesting to note that more grade 5 and 9 learners have access to a computer at home than at school. And we know there is an intervention at this from through the DBE to improve the access to devices and the rollout strategy. So that wouldn't be reflected in this study. It'll probably, we'll see that coming through in future cycles of terms. To end up the presentation, Chair, is what can we, you know, sort of do going forward? And we know that we need to improve at a faster rate. So we note the improvement levels. We note that we are still on an upward trajectory, but we need to accelerate the improvement. We need to look at where the gaps are between the fee paying and no fee paying, and between less and well-resourced provinces. We need to focus on the core curriculum, and we need to enable our learners to go into deeper levels of thinking. So, you know, and there is initiatives around there of strengthening the curriculum by making it less wide and making it more in-depth. So we can take note of the gaps and the transition levels that TIMSS is showing us. We can look at how we can use the data to strengthen the professional learning communities at school, especially the mathematics community of teachers and the science community of teachers, get them together, get them to share best practice. We need to empower our subject advisors, you know, to really give effective support. So we're seeing at the primary school level, they need to give much more support to our teachers so that we can have the right skills. We need to have high quality online resources. We need to take into account that the school climate does matter. So that link between the home and the learner performance is mediated through the school. So strengthening a positive environment at the school will serve us in good stead. And of course, language is a critical determinant. So, Chair, in going forward, the next steps that we've identified is that we need to complete the data. And we need to extract as much as we can from these studies because they're very powerful in the data that they reveal. And we need to complete the diagnostic reports for mathematics and science. So we're working on four diagnostic reports, mathematics and science at the grade 5 level and mathematics and science at the grade 9 level. And that then needs to be infused in the DBE planning for mathematics and science subjects. We've already had workshops with provincial mathematics and science coordinators. We did this immediately after the release where we called them to a meeting to show them, you know, some of the patterns and observations that's coming through so that even at the start of their planning and that the planning that they did at the end of the year could be informed by the TIMS results. This will be further elaborated and taken through at different levels of the system, and we will package reports accordingly. So there will be roadshows with district officials and principals in the first and perhaps overlapping into the second quarter, and the provincial workshops with subject advisors will continue. So that will be ongoing, especially when the diagnostic reports are released. And, you know, we will be looking at how can we further improve in the next term cycle. So we already have started our engagement with the IEA, as I said, and we're currently in the process of looking at item development for the next term cycle. Chair, I think that is our story so far. Thank you, Chair. Over to you.
Thank you, Dr. Chiriti. Over to you, Chair and Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Chiriti. Thanks, DG. Thanks a lot. Listening to the presentation by the department, I'll say I was very much impressed by the step-by-step account of the processes of standardization. I found this very empowering and thanks a lot for that. But Chairperson, DM and members, the issue of mathematics and how we have performance of South Africa, I think we can only improve this if we invest more in early childhood development. Because I think mostly the performing countries like the Asian Tigers, I guess they're investing more in their early childhood learning on math, science and technology in their schools. Let me give this opportunity to members to engage with the debates and ask questions, make contributions. And I'll ask the two committee secretaries to help me with the raising of hands, just, you know, recognizing those who have raised hands from both houses. Thanks a lot. Over to you, honorable members.
A person we have
of honorable Bruni Muratseta. That is the only hand I see for now. And followed by honorable Christian. As I'm looking at the screen. Muratseta, the floor is yours.
Mashabela also.
Honorable Mashabela.
Jefferson, can I fire on?
Yes, fire on, Rosses. Fire on.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, for the opportunity granted. Let me kill the other thing which is disturbing me. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let us take the stance now as we welcome and appreciate their presentations. As always, their presentations from DBE are very elusive and very clear, and provoking our thoughts in one way or the other. But in his introductory remarks, the Director General reflected on the bereavement that the department, as a department, they have dearly suffered. All we can say, Baba Director General, DG, the deputy and the deputy minister and your team, is that our heartfelt and sincere condolences for those fallen heroes and heroines, many of whom, of course, it is very clear they died in their line of duty. May their beautiful souls rest in peace so that they may rise in glory. The first question, Chairperson, which I want to pose is, well, while we appreciate, of course, the efforts taken with regard to how the department responded to the whole process of leakages, you see the report and the preliminary briefing by the deputy minister, how they have tackled all these things. It's assisting the portfolio committee in knowing, of course, that as a department they are hands-on. You see, it will be very saddening for despite the fact that the investigations are still on course, but it would be very saddening if the department was to come to us and say there were leakages and we don't know where the leakages happened. Apparently from the preliminary reporting and the briefing by the deputy minister and also the DG, the department is hands-on on that. And all we expect is to get the full brief, possibly in our next meeting. And the role played by Uma Lucy, let us also commend them, because under the circumstances where we were COVID-19 stricken, and they were able to deliver the examination to the point of marking and all doing all those sort of things, monitoring the marking, is assisting. But let me go to the teams. You see, this is a worrying factor now, Chairperson. You see, the socio-economic factors which informs the inequalities within our communities is a cause for concern. And in a way, it is central to the performance of our children education-wise. Now, my question is, how is the department planning to close the gap with regard to access to resources? You see, in the report, Dr. Polia indicated, whether it's Dr. Polia or it's Dr. Chetty, but one of them indicated how Limpopo and Mpumalanga, which are predominantly rural areas, are affected by this. You see, the access to resources such as workbooks and textbooks end up affecting the ultimate performance of our kids. Now, how is the department planning to close that gap? Number two, one of the setbacks in the education and the learning of our kids is with regard to the acquisition of the whole challenge of language barrier. You see, the learners normally who are taught whatever subject not in their mother tongue will surely perform less compared to those learners who are having their mother tongue as the language of instruction. Now my question is, how is our failure to use the indigenous home language for teaching and learning, impacting in the delivery of our education, and what is it that we are planning to do as a department. The last question, Chairperson, is with regard to the ECD migrating to basic education. Now the question is, what will the department do in their ditch to improve on the outcomes given the existing skills gaps amongst teachers and the instructors who were teaching these learners at the ECD level? You see, there is surely going to be a gap, jumping from ECD, being taught by instructors, into a full-scale basic education level, taught by fully trained teachers. This gap, how is the department intending to manage it? Thank you very much, Chairperson, for listening to me.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Mrosetla. Honorable Christians, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I would like to thank the Department of Education for their presentation. I have a few questions. The first one is about the exam, leaking of the exam papers. So my question is, what has the department, now that the examination papers has leaked and it has caused so much upheaval in the country, what has the Department of Education now done to ensure better vetting of the people that is dealing with the question papers? So it has come to light that the leak has been brought about with the printing company. So my question really is about vetting these companies and then also vetting the people who are working with these question papers, both nationally and at provincial level. We have to stop that from happening in the future. So we would like to know what the plans are. And then the second question, is the department satisfied with the current logistics in place with regard to the storage of question papers, both provincially and nationally, and then the eventual transportation of the question papers? Does that need to be improved on, or is the department satisfied with the status quo? And then recently, Minister Motshekga stated that the department would like to increase the TIM score at grade 9 level to 420 by 2023. Now, I think that is a very good aim to set. However, seeing that the pace of improvement has recently started to slow down, my question is, what interventions are now in place to speed up that improvement again, especially in light of COVID-19, the lockdown? Surely we envisage some kind of backlog with our students. So what interventions will now be put in place this year and the coming few years to speed up the improvement in schools and to see to it that educators are adequately equipped? Then also on the TIM scale, learners who achieve 400 TIMs, they are considered as having the basic maths and science knowledge at 400 TIMs. Now, South Africa is still below, in fact, way below the 400 TIMs. We still need to achieve significantly to reach even 400 TIMs. And as the previous speaker has said, I would like to latch on to what he has said. It's the unequal status of our students and their differing backgrounds across the country. And although they doesn't belong in this portfolio, there should be a link with social development, because it is this unequal status in home conditions that remain unequal, that is not conducive to our learners learning maths and science. Homes still lack basic amenities, running water, toilets, low income. So those are some of the starting points just to improve on our home conditions and thereby improving on our learners' education and thereby improving on maths and science. So my question really is, what is the linkage between basic education and social development to ensure this improvement? And then, of course, nationally, to improve on our home conditions of our learners. Thanks, Chairperson. That's all from me for now.
Honourable Christians. Honourable Mashabela, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Chairperson. So let me start on the appointment of a private forensic investigation company to investigate the leakage of maths and physical science. Then how much is going to be used to pay the company? Then the second issue is on the leakage of two question papers, which is something that is happening every year. And it is an indication of poor examination system in our country and leaderless. Can the department, specifically the Director General DG, Mr. Mweli, account for why this keeps happening under your leadership? Then what happened to those who were found to have leaked the papers, and to the students who were directly involved? Why was the department intent on compromising all students by insisting on the rewriting of the paper, despite the fact that it was leaked a few hours before examination? So I think my question is clear, specifically to the Director General. The Director General account for why this keeps happening, this thing of leaking keeps happening under your leadership. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Mashabela. Are there other hands from members? In the absence of that, I'll give over to the minister and the team to respond to some of the questions raised and the comments.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm audible because my network sometimes it used to give
you
me
a very
bit of challenge.
Yes.
But
thank you
so much, Chair. Yeah, we want to appreciate the condolences by Mr. Honorable Morwatsehla. It's a fact. Maybe we should have started there, Chair. We lost one of the key members in the system, the SG, the HOD for the Eastern Cape, due to COVID, and also the president of NATU. We also lost. Then there are so many teachers whom we have lost during December and early January before even schools could reopen. In Limpopo, I remember very well, we lost about four circuit managers in a period of 2 weeks, and some in Mpumalanga and some other provinces, and school principals. So may all their souls rest in peace, and may their families find comfort that the government of the Republic of South Africa is doing something on the COVID-19. Chair, we welcome all the questions by the members, only three members. Want to appreciate that the presentation was loud and clear, and is in line with what members are expecting from us. So allow me to give to the DG, but I just want to protect the DG from Honorable Mashabela to say every year there's a leakage. Not every year. This leakage, like this one that caused a turmoil, happened after a period of 10 years where there was no leakage at all. But yes, there are irregularities. Irregularities is something that is difficult to avoid. We cannot say that and now there will be no irregularities whatsoever. That cannot happen because we deal with people, and people have a way. Even there are people who are showing us on the mask, face masks, that some learners will try to write answers on the mask, and when they remove the mask, you think that they want to breathe easily, yet they want to get answers. I mean, those are kind of irregularities that the department is managing. That's why even this leak did not necessarily come from outside, that it was maybe caught by police or what. No, it was presented, brought to the attention of the department by the stakeholders, the same learners themselves, who said, we cannot, when we have studied, and then we allow people to send questions to us, yet you are ready for the examination. So I'm saying we are dealing with irregularities, and if members would want to that we come and present how we dealt with irregularities, that is doable. The department can come and do it. But let me give to the DG to respond to the other matters, then I'll come again and close, Chair. DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for responding to some of the questions and comments made. Let me start with Honorable Mashabela. On a lighter note, I think I do miss opportunities that we used to have. I'm sure I could have more time to explain some of these things to you. If we have those opportunities that we used to have, I'm sure you wouldn't have asked some of these questions. As the Deputy Minister said, well, the issue about how much is going to be involved in paying the private investigator, I'm sure Dr. Pulia can just help us to get that amount in the meantime as to what was the figure that we're looking for when we advertised for procuring these services. So we'll be able to give you the amount that we were looking at in dealing with this matter. The other issue, the Deputy Minister eloquently responded to the issue of papers leaking every year. I'm sure Honorable Mashabela knows that there are no papers that leak every year. The last time that a confined leak happened for the National Senior Certificate was, I think, in 2016. Yes, 2016, in the which involved a private school which is located in the area close to Zanini. And we also took appropriate action there. It ended up being a criminal matter. The principal of the private school appeared in a court of law. The law enforcement agencies were involved. So that's how far this thing has gone. We must also remember that everybody is saying the fact that we're able to administer the exams, which involved over a million candidates, is an extraordinary event in itself. And we combined three categories of candidates in one exam, which never happened in the history of this country. Full-time NSC candidates, part-time NSC candidates, plus the senior certificate. It never happened. Dr. Polia tried to explain that. It was an extraordinary event. And pulling all of those together, large-scale exams are associated, of course, with possibilities of leaks in question papers, given the fact that they are high-stake exams. In fact, the survival of many people or citizens in different countries running exams such as ours depends on their ability to be able to meet the requirements and be able to use this as a qualification that affords them participation in the economy of the country. That's the science and the economy explanation behind it. We wouldn't like any paper to leak, Honorable Mashabela. But I always believe that you can get the best systems in the world, but the one factor that will remain a risk in the system is the human element. We are unable to penetrate the hearts of human beings and capture them 100% and make sure that they do as expected. We hope and keep our fingers crossed and we pray. We subject them to all kinds of things. You can vet them, which we do, Honorable Christian, we do. And of now late, we've even gone to the point of using even services of the National Intelligence Services to help us heighten our security systems in the department. But for as long as you have human beings, aeroplanes in the main collapse because of the human factor all over the world. I can tell you that UNISA in 2019 had a paper leak. I haven't had anyone asking for the head of the vice chancellor whose contract came to an end in December. In Singapore, they had leaks in their public exams. In France, they had leaks in their public exams. In India, they had leaks in their public exams. In Malawi, in December, when we're dealing with our leaks, they were also rewriting their exams. Logically, anyone who's trained as a teacher or a manager who's been in education for quite some time, if you are unable to determine the scope of the leak, the logical solution is a rewrite all over the world. If you can't determine the extent of the leak, the logical solution, if you still have exams running in particular, you could consider a rewrite. Unfortunately, Honorable Mashabela, it would put a strain to others who are not involved. But if you can't determine who benefited and who didn't, the logical thing to do is to go for a rewrite. That's how it happens all over the world, including South Africa. But we can tell you when we come back that we now know what we didn't know then when we decided on a rewrite. And I still believe that the rewrite would have been the right solution in dealing with a matter of this nature, especially if you can't determine the scope or the extent of the leak, as Dr. Polia has explained in the presentation. So a rewrite is not intended to punish learners, but is to try to deal with an issue complex and vexing as this one as best as you can. And you also draw lessons from international experience and from your own training as somebody who operates in education. Honorable Muratetla will tell you that as a teacher also in you and a principal of a school, if you can't determine the extent of the leak, the best solution is a rewrite. So, we'll give you figures around the money involved for the private investigator. We went on tender, that's why it has taken this long. So we will be able to provide the figures to you, Honorable Mashabela. Honorable Christian, socioeconomic sectors, when we are working with the Department of Health, you'll also see when we release the grade 12 results, we'll provide more evidence of what we are doing in trying to support learners to mediate socioeconomic sectors. We have made progress, but we have not moved as fast as we should. Our democracy started only in 1994, but we can produce evidence that seem to attest to the fact that we've made progress, that many countries who've earned their independence and their systems much longer than we did. So I do agree with you. It's a matter, The issue of the poverty ranking of schools is intended to deal exactly with the socioeconomic sectors. And we can even show you, we'll show you when we release the grade 12 results, how we've been able to narrow the gap between the affluent and those who are less fortunate. In fact, the team's report also provided evidence in that regard in terms of how we are able to close the gap, particularly between your quintile 3 and lower compared to quintile 4 and 5. So it's not yet Uhuru, but we have made commendable progress. Learners are still performing below 400 indeed, but Dr. Chetty made an effort to show you, to give you a longitudinal analysis of where we're coming from in terms of our performance and the progress that we have made. I am extremely optimistic that we will definitely even hit the 400 mark, a midpoint, even much earlier than expected. Honorable Muratseta, in fact, Honorable Nchabeleng is right. The real answer, and there is no silver bullet for this, investing in human capital takes time in showing the results. Countries that are performing can demonstrate that to you. And Honorable Nchabeleng is right. We need to start from early childhood development, focus on the foundation phase. We are working with Professor Mamukheti, the Vice Chancellor of the University of Cape Town, and other experts from our universities in the country to invest in interventions that start from lower grades. That's why you're beginning to see this. And you'll also see the resilience of the class of 2020 demonstrating that if we invest from lower grades, it pays off over time. So I really take your advice on that one, that indeed we have to invest from the lower level of the system. Speeding up performance, well, we'll try, but as I've said, in education, you cannot do it over 12 months and so on, but you have to demonstrate the investment that you have made and how that investment is showing improvement, which I think Dr. Chetty also started to, in the presentation, he demonstrated that. Any great activities that you are beginning to focus on, school readiness, providing quality education from the foundation phase, those are some of the activities will put us in good stead come the next tests, such as TIMSS and others. The logistics in place in terms of the storage and transporting of question papers, we're trying to do our best. We involve law enforcement agencies when question papers and scripts are transported in most provinces. If it's not law enforcement, is the security services that have been procured to ensure the safekeeping of the question papers as well as the scripts. The preliminary investigation hasn't shown any lapses in the storages and even in the transporting of question papers. Dr. Polia can tell you that not one person is able to access question papers. The login system in terms of the storage of question papers, it's arranged in such a way that it involves a minimum of two people to access question papers through the safe in a storage facility. And the two or even more have to collude in order to, to create lapses in the systems that we have. In the Western Cape, they've even taken it to another level. It's an electronic system. It can only be opened in collaboration with the provincial office of the Western Cape, and there's a particular time that they allow, access to question papers and so on. So we have upped our security arrangements in our storage facilities and the transporting of our question papers. What have we done to ensure better vetting of companies? Companies are vetted. No company services are procured without the necessary vetting. We've had companies and possibly moving forward might be going down to even include you know, other aspects that were not necessarily part of the vetting and so on. As some of these things happen, we indeed become wiser. In most cases, we try to preempt them, but in some cases, as I said, the complexity of human beings, sometimes you are unable to cover it 100%. Honorable Murwatsetla, the issue of upskilling the ECD practitioners, well, we have a comprehensive teacher development program which has been even implemented when this function is still with social development. So what we will do is to strengthen that teacher development program. Many of the ECD practitioners, some of them didn't even have NQF level 4, which is your grade 12 equivalent. We now even have ECD practitioners who have NQF level 5 and NQF level 6. And that's how far we have gone, and we are going to strengthen that and upscale that program in terms of plugging on the gaps for teacher development for the practitioners in ECD. Language barrier, you're absolutely right. We're doing several things. We've got a pilot running in the Eastern Cape to try and address the issue of the language of learning and teaching. The majority of the learners in South Africa are offered education in a language that is not their home language or indigenous language. So we're trying several interventions, both at lower levels and even up to grade 12. As we all know, that for grade 12, you'll have question papers in both English and Afrikaans. We were piloting isiXhosa in the Eastern Cape during preparatory exams. Eastern Cape has been running that from lower grades, and they are going up with it. And then at the fullness of time, we will share the findings of that pilot project that we have been running in the Eastern Cape. Indeed, language is a barrier, especially if it's not your home language or your mother tongue. If it is the language of learning and teaching, there's a abundance of knowledge and research on that, which attests to that point that it is indeed a barrier. Socioeconomic factors impeding performance, I've indicated that from funding, this is what we are trying to do, providing workbooks to all the 23,000 schools, public schools, is part of what we are trying to do to mediate that. But please, if you meet with the Finance and Fiscal Commission, you also need to put these questions to them as to what progress have we made to reduce inequality in between provinces. I haven't heard that question coming from members of either Portfolio Committee or maybe Select Committee. My humble request is that at some point, that question needs to be put to the FFC committee. Efforts made to deal with leaks of the two papers. Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Honorable Murwatsetla, for commending us about the progress that we have made. We will come back to give you a full report, which I hope you'll appreciate the efforts that we have taken in dealing with these leaks. We first trying to prevent them from happening, and if they do happen, we leave no stone unturned to make sure that we pursue the source, but we also you know, deal with those who are, that are involved, particularly those who are adults, were either in printing or using this for other benefits and so on. But in terms of learners, the regulations are very clear. There are penalties up to even 3 years of barring a learner from writing exams. So that's what we are doing in the system. Otherwise, thank you very much for appreciating the efforts that we are making and the sacrifices made, particularly by our martyrs who died in the course of duty, who every day had to do the work that they were supposed to do, carrying out a national assignment, you know, staring ill health and death in the face, but continued to do that. Deputy Minister, I've tried to respond to comments and questions raised. I don't know whether Dr. Polia and Dr. Chetty might want to add on some of those that I've not adequately addressed. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you, TG. If they have something to add, they can come in, Dr. Chetty, as well as Dr. Palio.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. DG has covered us more than adequately in terms of the exam report, but just 2 points. The one is in terms of storage and distribution points. DG is correct. No storage point or strong room can be accessed by one individual. We have what we call is a double locking system. So you'll find that your strong room door has got a double lock, and each of the keys to those separate locks are kept by two separate individuals. And those keys are then in turn locked in their own little safe with a PIN code. And that PIN code is only known to the key holder. So it's impossible virtually for any one individual to access the strong room. In addition to this, on an annual basis, the DBE conducts an audit of every storage point in the country. And the storage point evaluation is based on a clear set of criteria. So we have storage points where question papers will spend up to 5 days. We then have nodal points where question papers will spend one night, and we have distribution points where question papers are merely moved from that point in the morning to different schools. And all of these are evaluated, and if the DBE is not satisfied, then question papers will not be stored at a particular venue. The last point, DG and Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, is the value of the tender. I think I just need to upfront indicate that the private investigator has a very focused responsibility. And the responsibility of the private investigator is to firstly collect the cell phones. We'll provide them with a list of cell phones that must be collected from learners. So when the cell phone needs to be collected, there's a protocol that needs to be followed. Those cell phones will be analyzed in terms of the cell phone records, and a report will be presented to us. The value of the tender is 449,000. So that's under 500,000. Thank you, chairpersons.
Thank you, DG. Perhaps just on my side, just to add, I think also DG has covered us quite comprehensively to the questions raised on the TIM study. Perhaps just 2 points to also add is that going forward from this analysis, that the department will prepare
Dr. Chetty, just disappear a little bit. I guess there's Honorable Morencia's hand is up. Is there an emergency that we need to, or maybe you can talk after he has finished speaking? Honorable Gillian?
I, Chairperson, no, I can come after him.
Anna? Come again?
I said, Chairperson, let him finish.
Okay, no, sure. All right. Go ahead, Dr. Chetty.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be quick. Just to add that, you know, going forward, there will be province-specific interventions and analysis done so that we'll equip provinces to look at the TIMS data in a more in-depth way so that we don't have a one-size-fits-all scenario, that we prepare analyses that can further empower our provincial coordinators, our districts and our clusters within provinces to focus their interventions. Perhaps that's just for noting. And then perhaps also on the matter of the ECD and improving skills, later this year, we will also be conducting an early learning national assessment, which looks in a little bit more in-depth at that transition between the ECD and grade one. And that can be used as evidence. That looks at emerging literacy, emerging numeracy in a much more in-depth way in the language of the learner. And that will further inform the upskilling of the practitioners so that there's focused interventions in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Are there further additions from the from your team, DM, DG?
Chair, that should be all. Thank you very much.
Honorable Gillian, do you want to take a bite?
Chairperson, thank you for allowing me. Mine is just a simple request to the DM and the DG. Nothing to do with the presentations, but issues on back to school. I want to thank the department for coming out against the quantile 4 and 5 on in the media and assisting our poor parents who's got children there who's affected by the pandemic. But I've got this request, DM. In what I've noticed and parents are really phoning me on a daily basis, is also in the quantile 1 to 3 schools, the no fee schools, there is certain schools that are asking parents to buy their own stationery and also for children to pay a fee before acceptance. If the department can just in the media come out and give the real message out to our parents and also to that quantile 1 to 3 schools. I'm trying to intervene with the departments we happen in this province, but still, DM, we are struggling. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Gillian. That problem of the fees and all, I think it applies to all the provinces. And maybe my request would be that the department should, communicate, and clarify people and give direction where there are uncertainties about our people. And then I like to say from this that we're going to the end, that we're going to later have I'll release the department so that we can deal with internal matters, like deal with our minutes of the past meetings and all. And then from me, Chairperson, I'll say it's never too late, nor will it ever be too early to give a moment of silence for the fallen heroes and heroines in the education battlefield. Let's take this moment of silence before we release you so that we deal with matters related to the minutes of the committee. Moment of silence for the departed. Amanda. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah. And I'd just like again to say the parting note that we support your dream 2023 and that you should go beyond the 420.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DM, and thank you, colleagues.
I would like to say, DM, your closing remarks, sorry, before we go into the minutes of the meeting.
No, Chair, we really appreciate the support of the committees. Yes, we know that you keep us on our toes, especially if you are ahead of the issues and the researchers are doing a good work. Like, we cannot see all the sides. The other side may only be seen by members of the select and the portfolio committee. And we really, really appreciate that the things that the department cannot see, when you are able to see, bring them to the attention of the department. And by that, we will be giving people of South Africa a better service in education. Chair, just the last question, just to give a bite on it, the one by schools which will want some form of funding. Yes, I know that sometimes, but it's not easy that a school can take that decision without the involvement of parents. Normally, they discuss with parents, but we are saying those parents who do not yet, even if the majority of the parents within a school have agreed to pay a particular amount of money, but if the parents does not have money, let them come forth so that as a department in our provinces will be able to help them. Because a child must not be expelled from school because parents do not have money to pay. So we have ways and means on addressing such matters. But under normal circumstances, it's parents coming together under the leadership of the SGP to say we would need 100 rand per parent. So the problem becomes when a child must suffer for that, yet it's a decision by parents. But we'll look at that as Chairperson correctly put it. But thank you very much for the support of the committees. May God bless you.
May the team education live longer for the sake of our children. You are released. May I check with the team to fly the minutes of the last meeting, the minutes? Yeah, the minute, honorable members, page one, may you...
Person, the minutes are flighted. I'm on page four. Thank you.
That's the minute, honorable members. Any comment to this minute reflect the discussions that we had on that day? Any comment from members? Any mover for adoption of the minutes? Come again. Honorable Ndegeni moves. Any seconder?
I second Murat Setla, PR.
Honorable Pierre Murat Setla, second. Oh, Murasa, I see your hand is up. Okay. Is there another item on the agenda that I'm missing?
No, Chairperson. Those were the items for today.
Yeah. Honorable Co-Chair, do you want
No, I am covered, Chairperson. Thank you. I'm covered.
I think the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. I muted myself.
Thank you very much, Chair, for spearheading the shift in the right direction.
Bye.
Louis? Luella?
Hello.
Why are you stretching your head?
Well, this meeting is done.
Yeah, okay. We've got three, né? And then Ngobo, I didn't see Ngobo.
No, I never heard from Honorable Ngobo either.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
Ms. Kaka, everything fine your side?
Sandals, over again.
Ms. Kaka, you are muted. Unmute, Kaka.
Oh, sorry. Hi, colleagues.
Hello.
Everything is fine on my side, but I've just noticed that the attendance on the minutes that have just been adopted, my attendance is not. So I'm going to
say. Can you correct that attendance and then just resend it to me, please, ma'am?
Okay, I'll do it now.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Okay, colleagues, see you next week.
All right, thanks for everything. Bye, thanks for everything.
That's
hello, Portia.
Thank you.
Portia,
can you hear us?
Portia,
you must mute. Unmute, Portia, unmute.
She doesn't want to talk.
Oh, wait. Can you just give me 3 minutes? Don't knock off yet. I want to talk to you for just 3 minutes when everybody's off. Please.